All right, episode 6 with Jesse was a blast to record. Jesse and I share a deep passion for education, but what I loved the most about our conversation was her journey from being a self-described behavior kid to a teacher who champions her students' growth. Jesse has navigated different roles within education systems, all while staying true to her values. I can't wait for you to hear her story and learn how she brings compassion and energy into her classroom. So get comfortable, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
This is the Elemental Educator, the podcast where we kindle the fires of dialogue with the alchemists of education. We're here to embark on a journey where ancient wisdom meets the contemporary world of education. On Elemental Educator, we dive into the deep waters of adaptability, feel the grounding earth of core values, ride the swift winds of change, and ignite the fiery spirit of risk-taking. Fire. Earth. Wind. Water. This is the Elemental Educator, and now your host, Tyler Como.
All right, Alchemists, welcome back to another episode of Elemental Educator. I'm so excited to be here with Jesse Rohrbeck. Jesse, thank you so much for joining me.
Yes, thanks for having me.
I'm so thrilled to just share this passion and see the passion in other people as they bring it out here. But I really want to start this with learning about you and learning who you are and how you got about the education world.
Yeah, so I have been teaching for 10 years. I actually had an amazing fourth grade teacher. How do I put this? I was a behavior kid. And so I had some really amazing teachers that helped me be successful. And as I got older, I volunteered at preschools behind the apartments where I lived when I was a kid. And then I taught at a preschool and high school. And so education has always been some part of my life. And then I went to night school while working full time at a preschool. So I was able to take everything that I learned and then go and apply it at work the next day. And so I think that was a huge part of me just starting this journey successfully. My husband and I moved to Idaho 7 years ago, and I started teaching as soon as we got here. Like I said, it's always been part of what I've done and who I am. And it's been really fun getting to know this new community and starting all over. And that kind of sparked me being a person who's hungry for change.
That's quite the journey. Thank you for sharing. I would call myself a behavior kid too when I was growing up. I got kicked out of my school when I was in grade one. And I look back on that all the time and I reflect on it. And it really actually has impacted the way that I go about my classroom and my routines. Have you found that you reflect back on how you were when you were in school and it's impacted the way that you go about and being an educator?
Yes. So I like to say that I have a heart-centered classroom. And so I focus a lot on the kids who struggle. We're not supposed to have favorites, but those are the ones that I really tune into and get to know and build relationships with. And I think that's what's helped me be so successful in the classroom. But I do often reflect on the things that my teacher did for me. I remember specifically, we were learning about the Oregon Trail and we were supposed to be writing an essay, and she couldn't sit, she couldn't write. So she sent me in the hall to create a play, and I was able to make props, and I was able to have some of my peers come out and we would practice. And in hindsight, that was her getting me out of her classroom so she could teach and other kids could be successful. But she was able to find a way for me to be successful at the same time. And so I always think about, and there's lots of other things that she did, that fourth grade teacher specifically, but I'm always reflecting on things my teachers did when I was in elementary, middle, and high school, and try to bring that into my classroom too. Rather than getting into any kind of power struggle, it's like, I'm going to figure you out and we're going to get through this together.
That's a challenge approach. And that's such a cool way to do that. I love that phrase you said about your classroom. It's a classroom with heart and a classroom with love. When you started in the school you're in, is that how the dynamic already was around you, or was there a shift in culture that kind of had to take place for that?
I think it definitely was already established. So when I first moved to Idaho, that was the first real big change that I had experienced in my adult life. My husband and I, as soon as I found out I was pregnant, we were like, let's move to the country. And so we didn't know anybody in the area. My parents had moved here, so we knew my parents, but we didn't have any peers here. And so I started right after my son was born. He was about 4 months, and I decided to go back to work, and I was a substitute teacher. And so I went into every single building in the district that we moved to and went shopping, if you will, and landed on the school that I'm in now. This is where I want to work. And you just, I think if you've worked in education, you can walk in a school and immediately feel the culture when you walk in the doors. And so I kind of cornered the principal in the staff lounge and was like, you're going to hire me. And he was like, okay, crazy lady. But 7 years later, he's now since retired and I'm still there. And we've been through so many changes in our building, different principals, different assistant principals, different curriculum. And the core culture of the school has always been do what's best for kids. And that's what drew me to that.
I love that. You guys are so rooted in values of putting kids first. And when you find that places do that, the stories are ubiquitous that everybody thrives when they put kids first. I want to jump back and do a little comparison because before you moved, you were working where you were before. So where was that and what was that shift like and that jump like for you?
So I was teaching kindergarten. I was living in Western Washington and the dynamic of teaching, moving from Washington to Idaho, we're neighbors. You think it wouldn't be that different. But teaching in Washington, it was very data-driven PLCs. And I was meeting with my team mandatorily every day or with an administrator every day. And I had 11 different languages in my classroom. So I was on three-way calls with interpreters every day. And so the challenges were so different. Unfortunately, in some aspects, there's no diversity where I live now. I live in rural Idaho in the mountains. And so it's a really small community and the challenges are so different. But now I'm finding that we're doing things for kids because we want to. And the staff, we're initiating those conversations. And there's not so much top-down mandatory, no one's watching over us. There's that level of trust there. And because it's such a small community, the relationships that I'm building with it's probably not very professional, but I'm sending text messages to parents and things like it's such a different world. And it took a lot of getting used to. Walked in the school and I was like, you guys have a Christmas tree? You can't have a Christmas tree, things like that, where it's just the shift has been something to get used to, but both had pros and cons for sure. But I'm loving the community here that you don't have in a school of 700.
Right. And I'm in a rural school too. My school is actually 73 kids right now.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And we're grade 1 to grade 11 because we don't have any grade 12s this year. And that sense of community that you talk about is so impactful. And it's such a big difference because I have been in urban settings with large schools before and you don't have that sense of community and kids are different and teachers are different and the building is different. In your current building where you've been for 7 years, has there been a shift in how kids are from year 1 to year 7 right now?
I think anybody who's working in education will tell you that our kids are changing. I'm not going to sit here and hypothesize as to why, but there's definitely been a shift in stamina, in behavior. I feel like I'm being forced to change and grow and adapt as a teacher because every year I'm presented with new challenges. And of course, every year, the dynamic of a classroom is always going to vary, but there's definitely been a shift in just the level of accommodations that students require to be successful that I don't recall my first 3, 4, 5 years of teaching.
And you touch on something very true, which is we are forced to change, and we're not just forced to change because of what's happening in the world. We're forced to change every year because we work with new kids every year. Right. Yeah. And so on top of working with new kids, is there other changes within your role in those 7 years in this building that have changed, that have forced you or challenged you to go about things differently?
So I taught kindergarten in Washington and quickly became a lab classroom and an instructional coach. And again, it was such a big community that I was specifically an instructional coach for kindergarten. So I thought I was going to teach kindergarten for the rest of my life. That was my area of expertise. I had taught pre-K and preschool for many years through high school and college before that. And I thought that this is my niche. This is what I'm good at. I love the littles. I'm going to stay here forever. And when we moved here, I got a job in a kindergarten classroom and it was like everything was validated. This is what I'm supposed to do. But I found pretty quickly that I had peaked, for lack of a better term. I was doing Socratic seminars with 5-year-olds. I feel like I had reached my full potential in that role. And around the same time that I was feeling really hungry for something different and just how else can I challenge myself as a kindergarten teacher, I was approached by our superintendent. Hey, we need you to be the assistant principal in your building. And so I was terrified. I knew I never, like I said, I was a behavior kid. being an administrator was not anything that was ever on my radar. I ran a classroom that was like a parkour facility. I didn't know how to be professional to that degree. At least I didn't think that I did. And I certainly don't view myself as a person who can be under a microscope. But I was like, let's do it. And I loved that building and I loved those people. And I thought, if I have an opportunity to serve, let's go for it. And then I found out I had to have my master's degree in order to stay in that position. And in Idaho, you don't get compensated for having your master's degree, at least not enough to make it worth what it's all the things that go into it. I decided to step down, and the superintendent had actually created a position for me because our school did not have Title I reading. And so I then was in a new position of being our MTSS coordinator and our interventionist for our building because we didn't have that and our kids desperately needed that support. And I was trying to do that while being the assistant principal, and it was two full-time jobs. And so the opportunity to break that piece of it off and just focus on supporting kids with behavior and intervention was perfect for me. And then our levy passed, but we still had to make some cuts. So then that position was cut because we simultaneously got a new superintendent. And she said, we're not a Title I school. We can't have a reading intervention teacher who's certified. And so that position went away. And my options were second grade or fourth grade, neither of which I had taught. And so I jumped in with fourth grade because this group of kids that I'm with, I actually was their kindergarten teacher in 2020. And so this is like our redemption year. We had closed in 2020 and now I get to have them all again and actually finish a school year with them. The amount of change that I've experienced since I moved to Idaho, I say that I have professional ADD because I haven't done anything for more than 2 years since I got here, but I have grown so much in every role. I've learned so much and I wouldn't change anything for sure.
Thanks so much for sharing. And there's so much to unpack there. It resonates with me a lot because I am very much in the same boat. I went from my first year at teaching at a Hutterite colony to teaching at a very urban junior high to teaching at another urban junior high across Alberta, different part of the province altogether, to being a first year assistant principal to being a principal now, all in the span of 5 years. So 5 schools, 5 years. And I just haven't been able to sit still with it. And we're still going. I want to unpack several pieces with that. But the first thing I want to ask you is, at what point in that journey did you sit down or reflect and go, education is the right path? I know I've made the right choice. Let's keep rolling with it.
I think for me, anytime I can see tangible impact, whether that's seeing a student go from throwing chairs in September to sitting in the classroom and being successful in April, or a teacher approaching me and saying, thank you for helping me with that student, or thank you for just listening to me while I vent about XYZ. Anytime I can feel that tangible impact, that's how I know that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I think that we all want to find our purpose, right? And when your purpose just keeps getting validated, it just gives you that acknowledgement, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Not to say that there are not days where I go, what am I doing? Or is this right? We all have those days where this can't be right. Things are chaotic. But overall, it's that tangible growth that you see that makes you go, yep, this is it.
And if you're so focused on being there for the kids and you see the growth in the kids, that's that validation, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Within that, some of those changes were self-imposed and some of those changes were imposed. So how did you roll with...
For one, when your superintendent asks you to do something, even if it doesn't feel good, you're like, okay. And I think the root behind me being okay and not having any pushback is just knowing that I'm going to be okay. So when you're asked to do something, it's hard to look someone in the eye and say no. And so I just knew, regardless of what role I was going to be in, that I was going to be okay, and that I was going to be serving kids. And I think that in a school setting, the capacity of how we can serve kids from the custodian to the kitchen staff, like the opportunities are endless. And so I just knew, regardless of what hat I was wearing, I was going to get to love on those kids and support the staff in the building. And so I really had a moment. I know I came home to my husband and was like, are we doing this? This is what it's going to look like. And my days are going to be longer and I'm going to be working evenings and I've got to go to all the events, and just breaking down what that change would look like for our family and our lifestyle. And we looked at each other like, why not? Like, it's, things are scary because we make them scary. And as soon as I realized that I'm just, my role is just going to look a little different, but the root of me going to work to help kids wasn't changing. So I think that's why I was okay with, you're going to do this, and can you do this? And now we'd like you to do this, and you don't get to do that anymore. I was just like, okay, as long as I get to love on kids.
And as long as I get to love on kids and I get to see the growth in the kids, and you can do that in any role in an education system, it's what you make of it. And that's what, those are conversations that I have with my own staff and parents around and kids around all the time, is we do our jobs because we love to work with the kids and see the growth in the kids. And it doesn't matter what job you're doing in our building, you can find a way to see that. So it's, yes, such a powerful statement. You also talked about your support system outside of your professional setting with your husband. And so what role did your family play in supporting you through taking on these changes?
Being a teacher and a mom is just a really overstimulating reality. And so my husband has stepped up in so many ways. I bring our son to school with me every day, but he picks him up. So I have that time after school. So we roll in right when we're supposed to in the morning, but I have that opportunity in the afternoon to prepare and get my head around things. And then just being my person, especially in the role of assistant principal, I was working with tier three kids and tier three parents every day. And to be able to come home and obviously confidentiality, but just unload on my husband so that I could purge and then shift to being a mom and being a wife and doing all the things that bring me joy outside of work. I think everybody needs a person that they can process with so that they're not carrying that. It can get heavy fast working with kids, for sure.
Absolutely. And my partner is a teacher and we've got a little one under two, and life is crazy, right? Like, we are off the walls. I don't know how she does it. And she says, I don't know how you do it, but we somehow figure it out. And two people in education sounds really awesome, but boy, are we busy.
It's a lot. Yeah.
You did talk about when you had that assistant principalship role, how there were so many things and meetings and dealing with tier three parents and tier three students. And there's a lot on your plate. And so what steps did you take to work through all of the time that was being consumed?
Yeah, I learned about boundaries really quickly. I never really needed them other than like parent communication, right? As a classroom teacher, I would turn my phone off or not check my email, or I'd get one of those emails that I'd tell myself I wouldn't respond to until I let it simmer and dealt with it the next day. But I was just inundated with people needing me. It went from 26 parents needing me to 50 staff members and 400 children. And I had to really quickly set boundaries for myself that I didn't know how to do at first. And so I felt myself getting overwhelmed and burnt out really quickly, and was forced to set those boundaries. And I think just being able to identify and prioritize, I feel like, for lack of a better term, assistant principals are like triage, right? Like, my radio goes off and it doesn't matter what I'm doing, I'm responding to that classroom and I'm de-escalating that student. And so really coming in every day with, these are my have to's and these are my want to's and my need to's, and just prioritizing. And I think all teachers in all settings do that to some degree. But I really had to break down what had to get accomplished and be really intentional not to bring everything left over home with me, and learn how to let things go and realize that, I think, as an assistant principal and a teacher, our staff and students don't know what we don't get to, right? I didn't tell everybody, this is everything I want to accomplish. And I didn't have a speech. And then they were like, but you never did what you, they don't know. If I wanted to do a cool project or I had an idea and it didn't come to fruition, nobody knows but me. And so I think that was the most impactful thing, is just knowing it's okay if I didn't get around to making that really great slideshow or this super cool flow chart. Nobody knows.
Yeah. And one of the things that I recognized really fast as a leader is I love being a problem solver. And that's part of, I think, my drive behind everything I'm doing, is I want to solve problems. But when I started to solve the problems of all of those that I worked with, I became the problem solver.
So relatable.
And everybody comes to you to solve that problem. But when you take that moment, and it's more time the first time you do it, but you take that moment to teach them how to solve their own problem, you no longer become the problem solver and you become the coach, right? And you become the person that helps the adult grow too, which is the big part of leadership that I love about it, is working with adults and helping them grow as much as we see students grow. But within that leadership role, there are changes that you have to go about in your building as well. And you do have to still take on the role of being a problem solver, but it's problems that are probably coming from the top down in those situations. And so when you were tasked with solving a problem or making a change, how did you go about implementing change?
Oh gosh, I think that I knew what my strengths were, but I had to shift from applying them to teaching others how to apply them. And I finally had to have a conversation like, I'm Disneyland. When you call for me and I remove a student from your classroom, I'm Disneyland. And it doesn't matter how stern I am or what consequences I give. Obviously, TBRI training, I'm going to meet their initial, they're not ready to learn yet, right? I'm going to meet their needs. But as soon as I return them to you, we've hit the reset button on anything you've done in your classroom. And so I think that shift from, I'm going to help you, I got this, I'll grab him, he could come with me, I'll take her, to here's what I do when I take them. Here's the XYZ for de-escalation or whatever it is. And next time you call for me, I'm going to come into your classroom so that you can go be with your student and you can build that relationship and you can practice these strategies. And I'll just hang out with the other 20 some kids until you get back. And I think that shift from having the power to empowering other people really took so much off of my plate because the calls got fewer, right? And people felt good about the relationships that they were building and the things that were happening in their classroom. So I think implementing the change of just, I don't have to be the hero, I can help everyone else be the hero.
That is such a powerful way to do it. And I don't know if you've read Stephen Covey's Leader in Me, but you're making all of those teachers leaders in themselves. And it's the belief that everyone can be a leader and has leadership abilities. And in Alberta, we actually have what's called the Leadership Quality Standards. And so we also have a Teacher Quality Standards and a Superintendent Leadership Qualities. So basically anybody that has a job in education, they're held to specific standards and they're pretty similar. There's a little bit more for the leadership ones than there are for the teachers. But some of the leadership ones that resonate with your story are effective relationships and building the leadership capacity and embodying visionary leadership. Because those three things and you going and taking over the classroom and letting that teacher come out of the classroom to build that valued attachment with that kid, that's how they're going to see an actual change. Otherwise, you're just going to continue to be the problem solver and the problem solver and the problem solver. And that kid gets to go to Disneyland, but then they get to go back home. Right. And that's the hard part, is they get to come to Disneyland and go home. I started working with a few of my difficult, challenging students by being Disneyland. And once I was able, and I took a little bit of a different approach, but similar, once I showed the teacher that Disneyland works and this is how you can take a kid there, this is how you could take that kid in your own classroom. And boy, do those results make such a big impact. I'm sure with all that's gone along your way, where you're at now, life's easy. There's no challenges for you in your job, right?
I can say that I am a successful teacher because I was assistant principal, for sure. My best friend is our BI in our building. She's the behavior interventionist. We were like tag teaming every single student in the building. And so we would go on road trips and listen to 8-hour podcasts about de-escalation strategies. And that was our thing that we did for fun. So we're cool. But now that I'm in a classroom,
I think it sounds great.
Yeah, so cool. These are what teachers do for fun. It's a Saturday night. We're doing a podcast. So now that I'm in the classroom, being able to apply, I mean, I help so many different students with so many different needs in those two roles as the assistant, or 2 years, excuse me, as the assistant principal. I'm able to apply that learning. I've also been in my same building for 7 years. So out of my 26 kids in my class this year, I've either been the kindergarten teacher, assistant principal, or reading interventionist for 22 of them. And so I'm at an advantage too, where relationships were already established, and teachers always joke. And even I've cracked jokes about PBIS and have you tried building a relationship? But the reality is that kids can't learn from someone that they don't like. And that's just what it is. And I'm an adult and I can't learn from somebody that I don't like. So I just know that has to come first.
And I think what you're really getting at is it's not that there's no challenges, but you have different challenges that are back in your room and you're no longer viewing them from that lens of the administrator empowering the teacher, but you're the teacher empowering yourself, which is a lot more powerful in its own. And that last point that you touch on, we refer to it as the emotional brain or the thinking brain. And it goes back to the old school reptilian brain mindset where people have that fight, flight, or freeze response. And you need to bypass that and get to the thinking brain and that cognitive level of functioning. But it's always going to be looping, right? It's always going to be checking and reflecting. And you need to make sure that people feel safe. And if they don't feel safe, they're never going to learn because they can't activate that thinking brain.
And I have students in my classroom who their lid has never flipped. And I have students in my classroom who it takes one of life's most insignificant farts for their lid to flip. And it takes all day to bring them back to their downstairs brain. And I think knowing your kids, and my joke, don't poke the bear. Like, I don't try to talk to a student who's escalated until I can tell that they're ready. And the first part of our conversation isn't, here's what you did wrong and here's what you need to do to fix it. It's, hey, look, there's a bug crawling on the carpet. Like, we're redirecting and we're doing everything that we can. And it's okay to have those conversations.
Absolutely.
Way later. When they're ready to actually process.
Yeah. I always use the line, I'll walk, you talk.
Yeah.
And they just want to be heard in those moments. All of these things that you've picked up and implemented and rolled with, did you have to go about learning any of these the hard way?
I spoke a little bit to learning boundaries the hard way. I think I burnt myself out really fast. Like we talked about trying to solve everybody's problems and being in a new role of leadership and being in a position where I had, as a classroom teacher, seen everything that I wasn't crazy about and then was in a position where I could do something about it. And I wanted to fix everything and redo our entire programs of RTI and MTSS. And I wanted to tackle everything all at once. I think that was the biggest wake-up call for me is pump the brakes. There's time. Have some boundaries. Prioritize. Yeah, I think that my first year as the assistant principal, I was wrecked. And I was doing two full-time jobs, being the assistant principal and the MTSS coordinator and dealing with all of the intervention, training paraeducators on how to provide the intervention, getting the curriculum, creating the schedules. It was so much more. And I think just admitting my shortcomings too. I wanted to be the best at everything, but I was humbled really quickly of, I've never created a master schedule and I'm not going to pretend I know how. And being okay with saying, I don't know how to do this, but I'm willing to learn, I think was huge for me too.
It's so cool to hear your story because as it's unfolding, I think back to that form that you filled out for me and you checked off the change and the risk-taking part. But really the heart of your story is your value, right? And it's coming back to wanting to put kids first and do the best for kids. And every single message that you've shared so far has been coming back to that. So it's so cool to see. But you touch on one piece there where you did all of these things. I'm starting to learn that you don't like to feel complacent and you like to seek out challenge and opportunity and things for growth. How do you balance that line between where you are right now in not feeling complacent, but also still seeking that challenge?
I think we all know ourselves and we can all tell when we're starting to feel stagnant. And I think that when I can feel myself starting to get to that place where I don't want to say bored, because this is not a job where you ever get bored, but just stagnant, where autopilot, right? I don't know how else I can throw all these synonyms out, but you know what I mean? I can find myself seeking change. And sometimes it's small things, like I'll sign up for a professional development, or I'll go to this leadership conference. And then sometimes it's huge things, like completely changing classrooms and changing roles. But I think for me personally, when I start to feel stagnant and I feel like I'm on autopilot, I start to lose my passion and I start to notice that I'm not going above and beyond for my kids and I'm not challenging myself. And when I'm stagnant, then they become stagnant too. And so passionate teachers have passionate classrooms. And so I think for me personally, I have to be challenged to stay passionate.
And I was going to add on to that, and it's so obvious from the kids when you're becoming complacent because they call you out so quickly.
Oh, yeah. We do this every day. I know, because it's easy.
Can we do something different, right? I've been there. Yeah. Or how can we challenge it and make it more fun, right? Jesse, you talked about how you implemented change, and I loved that story where you embodied visionary leadership and you empowered the people around you. When you shifted from being an administrator to back to classroom, how did you process that change?
I think at first it was challenging because as we had new leadership and things were rolling out, it was, I had to check myself of not your problem, not your job, not your place, and really just shift my head back to being the receiver of information instead of the provider. And I've stepped back out of a leadership role altogether. And it's been a huge shift of now I get to prioritize my strengths to my students instead of to everybody else. But it took a minute for me to, I had to check myself. Wait a second. It's okay for me to just listen and follow directions. And I'm a strong personality. And I think leadership just, if there's a anchor chart at a table and we're given a task, as soon as they say go, I'm like, give me the marker. What are we doing? And so that's just my personality. And so I think it's been really just a great learning experience for me to go, it's okay to be in the back seat.
That's so awesome to hear. It sounds like it's a really hard thing to do.
Yeah, it's forced me to grow and humble myself and just remember that I have so much to learn. And I'm constantly, I can't say out of one side of my mouth that I'm seeking change and seeking growth. And then out of the other say, I already know it. You don't have to tell me anything. I've had your job before. I think it's been so great for me to go, every single person in our building has something to offer me that's going to make me a better teacher, and being open to that. Because I think sometimes teachers get in this mindset of that wouldn't work for me. That wouldn't work for my classroom. And so it's so important to take every little nugget and say, okay, how can I make this fit my teaching style, make this fit my classroom, and adapt it so that it works for me?
Yeah. Everybody is so, we talk about our kids being so unique, but our teachers are also so unique. So they need to recognize too that it doesn't need to look the same every room you go into.
Yep.
It sounds like we really did have this organic flow here. We didn't really get into that whole habit piece because you've talked about your habits, your routine, and how they've impacted your life around you. Did this just spur out of from you, or were you inspired by anything around you to take on this educational leadership role the way you have?
I think it's just my personality. It's funny, so in our building, in our whole district, actually, we did something called the Strength Finder. And it was like an Enneagram test where you answer all these questions and it tells you what your major strengths are. And mine were communication and activator. So I love talking to people, getting to know people, tell me your whole life story. And I love finding potential and activating that potential in other people. And I think that my strengths speak to that. That's just, I don't really have a choice in some form or fashion. That's just how I'm built. I'm going to be in a place where I'm advocating, whether it's for kids or adults, and I'm going to be speaking my mind because I don't know how not to. And that's just, I've just manifested into all the different roles that I've had.
Is that Clifton Strengths that you guys would have done? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we did the Clifton Strengths up here too. One of my favorite ones we did was actually called Your Least Favorite Coworker. And it was a survey on, it didn't have to be a real coworker, but it was everything you would have hated about your least favorite coworker. And then the opposite was what you would have really liked to do. So it was a neat little task because it got people thinking just a little bit differently in terms of our professional development. And you just never have those conversations with your superintendents. Tell me about your least favorite coworker.
And I loved it because we, as a whole staff, we all shared our strengths. We did all different kinds of activities around them. And so I was able to, not that I have any least favorite coworkers, but when information builds empathy. And so I was able to see the strengths in all of my coworkers and go, oh, like your strength is woo. Like you need someone to go at a girl. I need to know that about you. And so there's just so much that can be gained from knowing what everybody's strengths are and lifting them up instead of condemning them for it, for sure.
With all of that being said, what advice would you give to people that are struggling to make that change or take that leap, take that risk?
Gosh, we're all built so differently. I would almost just say, think about a time where change or risk was forced upon you and what was the outcome of that? Because any time in my life where I've been forced to change, the outcome for me personally, and obviously I'm talking about in a career setting, not a big change like a life trauma, right?
But career is pretty big too, though.
Sure. But anytime I've been forced out of my comfort zone, that's when I've grown the most. And I think the initial change of my husband and I moving to a new state made me realize in the thick of it, it was terrifying. Buying a new house, having our first child, not knowing anybody. I joined a softball team because I was like, I got to make some friends. And I was just like, hey, guys, need another player. Like we just, I was doing everything that I could to get comfortable again. And I, as soon as I did, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And so I would just say, check in with yourself, like worst case scenario, pros and con it. There's no change that I've had, like you've said, whether it's been self-imposed or imposed upon me, has had negative outcomes that didn't make me grow. And the positive way outweighed the negative. Like I said, if you feel that stagnant or complacentness, like big or small, seek some kind of change and start small. I didn't start small. I went like full send from the moving here to moving roles, but start small and find little opportunities to reignite that spark for sure.
And recognizing too that sometimes with change, there are things that go wrong, but time will fix those in no problem. It's all the things that go right that just build and build.
Yeah. And I'm not going to say that every change was rainbows and unicorns. There were days I came home crying to my husband, like, I can't do this. And there are days where I, you know, had totally screwed up something and had to apologize to 15 different people for how I handled a situation. It's not all gravy, but I'm better because of it. And I think that's the most important takeaway for me, for sure.
Yeah. And it's what you make of a situation, for sure. I always like to think about it's not always what happens, but it's how we respond.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And so when those bad things do happen, I always think about how do I want to respond to that? And that usually shapes where things unfold too.
Yep.
So what's next for Jesse?
I don't know. Ask me in a year when the next thing gets thrown at me. I really am loving fourth grade. And I'll be honest, every position that I've had in my school district has been dependent on a locally funded levy. Full day kindergarten, levy funds, assistant principal, levy funds, reading intervention, didn't matter. And so like, you're always going to need a fourth grade teacher. And there's something about the job security that I have right now that I'm really enjoying. But I think I know myself. I know I'm going to do this for a couple of years. And then I'm going to ask myself what's next. And I don't know what it is yet, but I feel like we have different seasons for different reasons. And right now I have a 7-year-old and he's in sports and we're busy and we live in rural Idaho. So we're outdoors a lot and we're doing a lot of things as a family and our child's old enough to do all the things with us now. And so I am enjoying this quiet season, believe it or not. Fourth grade is a quiet season for me. And so I think as our son gets older and things continue to, life just happens and changes. And I don't know, we're just going to find, I could go back to kindergarten. We could go full circle. Who knows?
Full circle, I think, means going back to Washington, right?
That's not happening.
There we go. Hey, Jesse, you do something really incredible that some of the people listening might not know about. So do you want to take a minute and talk about your own social media and what you're posting on Teachers Pay Teachers?
Yeah. So I went into social media with the pure intention of just acknowledging how hard this job is, no matter what hat you're wearing, and that we just need to laugh. And so a majority of the content that I create is just humor content. But I have, like I said, I have a heart-centered classroom. And so I call it the 5 C's. Compassion, courage, confidence, consciousness, and community. And I create resources that I always have those 5 C's in the back of my mind. So songs for building classroom community that I sing with my kids, where we've taken really popular songs and shifted the lyrics, where we're talking about growth mindset and grit and those things. And the classroom job applications where students can take on a leadership role in the classroom. And so the purpose of my page is to just build camaraderie and community with teachers while also sharing products that build that same camaraderie in the classroom.
I love that. I love that so much. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
We actually have no idea who's listening. I want to say there's millions of people listening to this right now. There we go. What would be your final thoughts that you'd want to share with anybody listening right now?
Gosh, I hope that whoever's listening finds some nugget from this that just sparks a desire to chase whatever emptiness you might have. Because I know we all pour from this cup in education that can get so empty so fast. And so I would just encourage whoever's listening to find that thing that's going to fill your cup. Is it risk? Is it change? Is it personal self-care? Whatever it might be, we have to fill our cup. And I think that's something teachers are selfless human beings, and we put everybody else's needs before our own. And I have found out really quickly that I'm not a good wife, teacher, mom, friend, sister, anything if I'm pouring from an empty cup. So that would be my biggest takeaway, is find some nugget from this that you can go, I want to try and implement that.
I know for me, the nugget that I always seem to pull every day from all of these conversations I get to have is how important our kids are and how important everybody talks about our kids, because they really are. They're our future. They're the reason we have jobs, right? Yeah. So we better love them because we want to love what we do. Hey, Jesse, thank you so much for joining Elemental Educator today. I know it's a Saturday. It's late at night. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Elemental Educator. Our aim is to illuminate optimal educational practices on a global scale. And second, we want to shine a light on the expertise and knowledge that Tyler brings to educational institutions. He's not just a talking head. He's a practicing educator, a school principal, armed with a master's in educational administration, and on the brink of completing his doctorate. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, find us on Instagram, Facebook, and X at Elemental Educator. And to contact us, fire off an email. See what I did there? Fire off. Okay. Send an email to elementaleducator@gmail.com. See you next time on The Elemental Educator.